Welcome to episode 26 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the latest must-see theatre online. We'll be discussing what's online, what's been and gone and where to find the best theatrical entertainment during the lockdown. We'll be bringing you the latest developments and press announcements in the world of theatre in these unprecedented times. So a little bit of background on me. I acted professionally after graduating from Warwick University and Drama School. I've been teaching drama, head of arts faculty and director of drama in four very different secondary school settings for the last 18 years. I'm keen for the creative process of Theatre Audience Podcast to be quite organic and interactive in light of theatres sadly remaining closed for the foreseeable future. So please join me on Instagram Live at 5 every Thursday, where I chat about the week's theatrical events with my friend and producer Darren Murphy. I've recently set up the Theatre Audience Podcast YouTube channel, where you can watch recordings of each Live at 5 in full and some of my interviews with actors and creatives. Feel free to contact me and discuss all things theatrical on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So this is my Theatre in Quarantine series of podcasts. During the lockdown every day, I'm discovering new theatrical morsels online. So in this episode, I'm going to keep you informed of my finds and let you know what's coming up. So here's part of my conversation with Darren Murphy this week on Instagram Live at 5. Well, RSC has postponed their 2020 shows and they've cancelled their Barbican season. That's it for the year. All gone.
Yeah, they had no choice though, because if they hadn't and it had relapsed, they would have been in like dire straits with ticketing and stuff. So
yeah.
I can see that they're being very cautious. And it's right. I think this year
they
just need to take a back seat.
Write it off and plan stuff for January. Yeah, I think so. Because I really do think there's going to be this kind of like everything just really seems to have changed out there in the world, and it's
definitely.
It's been on social media. It's been quite a headache this week, just with everything that's going on in the States and just horrible. But without being dwelling and being negative. Just even outside the whole process of the lockdown, because this is our little, like our time capsule of how things have evolved each week, really, with us and with the world and theatre as well. But it just seems you seem to have on the one extreme, the people that are still self isolating inside haven't left their houses, literally are trapped at home, and then you've got the completely don't care. It seems very little middle road. I've certainly noticed when I go for my daily walk or run that before people would leave that to, as they see you coming, you're kind of looking at them, you're making that judgment call, and then one of you crosses the road if it's possible where you are, or someone else kind of goes in the ditch a bit or runs down onto the road or steps to the side or hangs back. And now people are just like, I don't care about you, and it's like a bit of a different feel. Anyone seen any theatre online this week?
It is very different. No, I actually haven't seen anything. I've been really bad this week. I've not even seen much TV either, to be fair. I've kind of been listening to a lot more music and just, I don't know, just been doing other stuff. But there's nothing. I got an email recently from I sent it to you, the Southwark Playhouse, the Bronte Sisters. I'd like to see that because I missed I was at Southwark, and it was supposed to be good. I think it's live now, but it was a workshop production. They workshopped it for a while, but what I remember of people telling me about it, it wasn't ready to go on stage yet. But they had their slot and they had to go ahead with it. So, but we'll see. I don't know.
I've seen some stuff. I watched This House the other night, which was the National Theatre, the James Graham.
I saw your report on it.
James
Graham, obviously, he did, he wrote Ink, I think, but he also did Quiz, which we talked about weeks back, because I'd seen, you'd seen the stage production as well, hadn't you, Quiz? But there was that great TV sort of three-part series adaptation. That was great.
That's fine.
So this has, I really enjoyed it, but it's like we've been saying all along. We love theatre for a reason. It's a collective celebration of energy and an opportunity to feel and emote and be part of a live experience that is, you know, that evolves and that changes and, you know, and it's part of the... It was interesting seeing your photo of you going, I'm on a train for the first time, and you had your little face mask on.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's part of it, isn't it? You get a train, you go, you know... You arrive, you're at the theatre, there's the hustle and the bustle, that sound of the audience. If you're watching musical theatre, it's the warming up of the orchestra. And it's that moment of sitting there, whether you're there on your own or whether you're there, you know, with friends, or you're going to see someone that you know in a show. It's part of that experience. And for us guys, well, for me, certainly, it's my kind of passion. It's my religion. It's the congregation. And I'm missing that. I won't lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, much as these productions are brilliant tour de forces and everything, not the same watching it online. And so this house, I enjoyed it. I know that I would have really enjoyed it sitting there live. Part of it was in the round, part of it where the audience was sat, they were made to feel like they were in the jury. And I think I would have really enjoyed it. But for me... I found myself doing a sorting activity whilst watching it, you know, so I was kind of like part involved, part sorting some clothes into some boxes, and it was a bit shouty, and by the time it got to what I thought was the interval, I was like, I've done an hour of this. I was kind of, I'm going to stop now. And, you know, the acting was phenomenal, the direction was great, the set, everything, wonderful, 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 but for me, at home... I'd rather watch a film.
I know.
And it's sad because I'm trying.
But to be fair, Natalie,
I'm trying to support and be positive, but. That's where I am.
But Nat, it's not meant to replace. It's not meant to replace the live experience. It's to kind of fill in for us to still keep be connected to theatre. And at the same time, I think it's interesting because I'm speaking to some other people who are real big theatre fanatics that go to see a lot of shows. They've actually come to realise that they don't necessarily need to see so much, that when they do go back to being in the theatre, there will actually be a lot more kind of conscientious of what they choose about, which I found quite interesting as well.
So I'm talking to my friend and colleague, Charlotte, about theatre that we've seen online this week. So you caught This House. What did you think of it?
So I really liked This House. I was a bit tentative about it, hearing that it was a almost 3 hour long political drama. But I did a little bit of Googling before, I'll admit, and had to pause it a couple of times just to figure out a couple of little terminology things they were saying. But it was a really, really good production. I didn't think it would be that funny. And then actually quite heartbreaking at the end. The script really draws you in. So you become quite invested in it. And again, as someone who didn't grow up with British politics in Australia, obviously, you know, I don't remember this being part of life. So yeah, I got really invested by the end. And it's really cool. They interweave a lot of physical theatre into it as well. And they've got a live band on stage. So even though it's a political drama, it definitely doesn't feel like that for most of the play. So it was actually one of the favourite things that I've watched in the NT at home. Really enjoyed it.
Now, Charlotte, I know that we are both huge fans of Hairspray, and you managed to watch it at the correct time and see the whole production. Tell me about what you thought.
I'm a super big Hairspray fan, love a jukebox musical. And I think these live-to-TV musicals, seemed to either be done quite well or fall really flat. And I'd watched The Sound of Music one the week before, which kind of, I think, infamously fell flat with their casting, and the whole thing was super dry, despite having quite a good cast. And Hairspray, it has probably the same amount of, like, celebrity, you know, quote-unquote celebrity cameos, which obviously you're always tentative when music theatre does that. But it was so much fun, and it had a real theatrical feel to it. It didn't try and make it too cinematic. They weren't trying to pull many punches. It still felt like it had got its roots from being a stage musical being done live for TV. And if you look at some of the cast members, they're all Broadway performers, so the quality of production was really good. And who doesn't love a bit of a bop to Hairspray? It was great fun.
And an unmissable piece of theatre that everyone must watch, which is being streamed live on YouTube, and it's from Bristol Old Vic in conjunction with the Old Vic, is a production called A Monster Calls. I watched the premiere on Friday evening. It's a long time since I've been to a premiere, and this was the perfect thing to see. And here's a little interview that was the pre-show talk with the director, Sally Cookson, and other creatives.
Hello everyone, I'm Matthew Warchus. I'm the artistic director of the Old Vic Theatre, and thank you for watching this Voices Off event being brought to you digitally for the first time. And thanks to the members of the Monster Calls team who've joined me today. And that's Patrick Ness, who's the author, and Sally Cookson, the director, Adam Peck, who is the writer in the room, Selena Cadell, who played Grandma, and Matthew Tennyson, who played Connor. So welcome to you all. Thanks so much for doing this. It's great to see you all again. An absolutely staggeringly brilliant book that became a staggeringly brilliant stage production by all of you together, and one of the real highlights for me of my time as an artistic director at the Old Vic was having you all work with us and Bristol Old Vic as well in bringing this piece to the stage.
And the other was improvisation. But it's as equally a part of my character not to really, you know, I say that, but actually the opportunities haven't arisen that much. Because actually, when a gauntlet is thrown down, I'm always keen to pick it up. But I had actually seen Jane Eyre, and I just thought, well, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. I want to work with that person who created that team, and that astonishing storytelling power, because that's what excites me about theatre. So when my agent rang me up and she said, and the strangest thing of all was that I'd coached Sigourney Weaver playing my part, Grandma, in the film. And when I say coached, that sounds a bit... the point is that we have a working relationship. I'm not sure I should have said all that, actually. Anyway,
it's great. It's so interesting.
So I knew the story. I knew everything about it. And I just thought, well, this is extraordinary. I mean, I know this. I know this. But, of course, my heart, it's actually doing what I felt then, which was like, God, but I'd have to do physical stuff. And I was, you know, 30 years older than anybody else in this thing. And I arrived on day one, I saw all these beautiful, lithe young creatures all completely in their kind of outfits, all ready to, and Sal, and I had this lovely meetings with Sal. And of course, the other thing I do have to say, which is really vital to my part in it, was that it came at a time when my husband was dying of cancer. Now, rather than that being, oh, can't go there, I just saw that as an extraordinary sign. And Sally's understanding of my position of that was key. And I thought, my God, she understands, and she's going to bring that understanding. Because I didn't want to be involved in anything that did not have the kind of heart that the book and, you know, everything that I'd already associated with the story had. And I know many directors who wouldn't have been able to strip themselves open. And to cut a long story short, there I was on that day, and I, you know, oh my God, it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I've never, you know, felt so challenged, and I've also never felt so excited, because Sally's honesty just the ability to say, I have no idea what we can do, but we have this idea. Let's try something different. The cancel and continue, the trust, the astonishing openness made you feel you could say anything at any point. And it would just be harvested up into the extraordinary building of this huge, I mean, for goodness sake, a drama school. You joke about becoming a tree. Actually, what you don't really want to have to do those tree production. And there we were actually making a tree.
I think looking at the archive videos that like Monster Calls and the other ones that you've been putting out, whenever I see at the moment, it's just a very interesting thing. Whenever you see the shots of an audience together, and you see hundreds of people sitting there together, and it's suddenly quite shocking and moving, overwhelming to see the closeness and to see us all taking it for granted so much and the power of that. So it's going to be those first few weeks, months maybe, of theatre coming back. They're going to be a very, very extraordinary thing. I think enormous amount of gratitude and release just to be able to be together and absorbing stories one form or another. Because we all know that theatre has this extraordinary secret power to heal and protect people from really difficult challenges in life, give them a degree of strength for it. And this production is one perfect example of that. So thank you for making the first place. Thank you for letting us share it now at a time when there's a lot of healing that needs to be happening. And I really appreciate it. It's lovely to see you all. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for asking us.
See you on the other side, everyone.
Yeah, see you on the
other side. Really cool. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Top tips from Monster Call. So this is streaming until the 11th of June. It's on YouTube, and just Google A Monster Calls, The Old Vic. It's a phenomenal production, highly recommended by us. And of course, this was the work of the superb Sally Cookson. I loved her The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe at Christmas, and also Peter Pan back in summer. Both of those I've featured in previous Theatre Audience Podcast episodes. It was so poignant and visually beautiful, and I'll definitely be setting this as an online homework for my drama students. So thank you to the Bristol Old Vic for sharing this. And now onto the main interviews. In this episode, I speak with Karen Fishwick. She's a Scottish actor and musician. She has appeared in a number of productions in Glasgow at the Citizens Theatre and other venues. She was starring in a production of Our Lady of Perpetual Succour and Hansel and Gretel. She was nominated for a Laurence Olivier Award for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. And with the Royal Shakespeare Company, she was in The Merry Wives of Windsor in 2018 and their production of Romeo and Juliet. She played the part of Juliet. And the BBC Culture in Quarantine are broadcasting Romeo and Juliet on Sunday the 7th of June at 9 p.m. And here you can hear our conversation. Hello, so I'm here chatting, hello, to Karen Fishwick, who you've done loads of theatre and we're going to discuss all of that, but more importantly, coming up this weekend on Sunday, I believe that the RSC are streaming a production of Romeo and Juliet, and you played Juliet.
Indeed, yeah. Yep.
So, how have you been during this whole lockdown?
Oh man, where do you?
Are you?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I don't know. I sort of started off in a weird way because I was on holiday when lockdown was sort of all beginning. I was away in Australia for the best part of a month visiting my partner who is part of the Warhorse tour.
Oh wow.
And, yes, you know the way when you're an actor and you finally book a holiday and obviously a global pandemic, that is when you always say if you want a job, book a holiday, or if you want a global pandemic, book a trip to Australia. And over there, they were very chilled about the whole thing, really. So it didn't really feel like it was happening over there. And then there was a sort of a bit of a mad rush to get back when obviously that tour got stopped early and we were away in a camper van and on a beach in the middle of nowhere. And they were like, you need to get home. And there was this really weird like time pressure to sort of try and get back to Scotland before we sort of got trapped in Australia. It was very strange, slightly stressful and very expensive. But coming back and the UK sort of having been away for about a month, the UK was in a totally different stage of what was happening. It was very strange and being a little bit jet lagged. Coming back to sort of quarantine for a couple of weeks. And then from after seeing Glasgow for a little while, we've come up to Pitlochry, which is one of the most beautiful parts of Scotland. It really is amazing. I love it a lot. Staying with family. So I don't know, it's just sort of took us a little bit of time to, I don't know, we didn't get a fresh go at it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh.
what's sort of happening? I don't know, I suppose there was the time to get used to all the new stuff and then try and like find space and find your groove in a new place. I was about to move to Streatham and now I'm...
Streatham! I grew up in Streatham.
Yeah!
I went to school in Streatham. Oh, that's so funny. St. Reatham.
I've only been there a couple of times, but I can imagine it's quite different from, like, the bottom of the Cairngorms.
Yes. Slightly. Yeah, just the one hill.
Like, there's more sheep here. Just a bit mad, isn't it? Like, ups seem just the same as everyone else. I imagine all the ups and downs, and I'm very grateful. All my family are all sort of okay, and you're sort of like holding on to like the important things, aren't you? But it's still weird. Like some days I wake up and I have a total like lockdown creative buzz going, and then other days you just can't imagine getting out of your pajamas. Just the roller coaster, isn't it?
It is. I bet you've got some lovely walking and sort of you can go for nice countryside angles.
I'm grateful. I'm very grateful for that. And there's a dog here. I couldn't imagine lockdown without a dog.
To be honest, I've almost contemplated it myself. I've been on so many like just walks and, you know, and the majority of the people that are out when I'm going early or late in the evening are dog walkers. And I am like, am I the only person without a dog? When I'm running, it's not a problem. But when I'm walking, I do feel a bit like, it feels something's missing.
Yeah, totally. And I used to be terrified of dogs.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Totally love them. They're the best. So that has helped keep our spirits up, definitely.
Aww. Good. And so, I mean, this is really exciting that the RSC are going to be streaming your Romeo and Juliet. I haven't seen it, so I'm going to be tuning in at 9 o'clock, I believe. So tell me about that particular production then. How did you get involved in the RSC?
What was happening? Let's see, an audition came through for it when I was doing Our Ladies of Perpetual Succour that was on at the Duke of York's in London.
Which you were nominated for, was it Best Supporting Actress?
Yes, we all were, every single member of the cast.
That's phenomenal.
We were all nominated, which was really, really cool. So I've got my little certificate with all our names on it. It's really nice. I remember my agent phoning up and being like, you're going to love this one. They want to see you for Juliet. And just, it was so strange because I just couldn't ever imagine, like, getting that opportunity. So, yeah, I was super excited for it. I just went along and I think I had about 3 rounds to go through. And it was probably one of the nicest sort of easiest, like, I'm not saying the audition was easy, but the process of it was very peaceful, which was so nice. Anytime I went to the offices to go read, the director, Erica Wyman, had, you know, said, like, oh, have a look through the play, pick out some bits you might want to read, and, you know, expecting to go in and read them. And every time I went, it was an hour and a half later I would emerge from the room, because we'd just been reading about it and talking about it, and there was never anyone else in the waiting room. It was only ever me. You know,
that's
so it was,
nice.
It was just, it was really nice. It was sort of like, yeah, it was really cool. And the last round of the audition, I got to go to Stratford-upon-Avon.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, the audition at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, which I'd never been there before, and it was just really exciting, the sort of whole process of it, and just learning as well, even from the auditions, because I hadn't done any Shakespeare at all, really. Not professionally, anyway. Obviously, looked at it at school and things like that. So, yeah, it sort of came around that way. And then when I got the call to say I actually got it, it was a little bit mind-blowing, really. It was, yeah, I won't forget that moment.
Did they make you wait long? Did they make you wait long?
Do you know what? Yes.
So it was peaceful, but...
Oh, my gosh. The whole process of that, it took months. It really took a really long time. I think it must be very complicated from their end of things, because they're casting the rep of three plays, because it was
right.
Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, which I wasn't in, and The Merry Wives of Windsor. So you've got to
fit
assemble
something.
A collection of actors who can, you know, play different characters across the three plays. And so I can appreciate, like, how difficult that casting process must be. You didn't make it easy to wait. You're sort of going, I don't know if this thing's completely dead in the water, or... And it was really sad, actually. I had one copy of Romeo and Juliet on my bedside table. I had one at the foot of the bed on another little table, and I had a tiny little copy which I'd carry about in my bag. So I just, I don't know... I mean, I don't do that for every audition, but I just seem to have, like, I was like, oh, I'll be gutted if this doesn't work out, because I really feel like I've, like, I don't know, it's sort of really taken Juliet on in the months leading up to hearing about it, and I was like, oh, I'll be really sad if this doesn't go on, because, yeah, I kind of got to know her then a little bit, I suppose. It was mad.
Did you know what the other productions were that they were casting in rep at the same time, or?
Did I? I don't. Well, I'd had one audition for Merry Wives, so I knew that was there as well. Oh yeah, and I think I'd asked if I could be in Macbeth.
I know. Were you thinking, what if they don't see me as a witch? What if they see me as Juliet, but not as a witch? Because they couldn't make me Juliet and Lady Di- maybe I could play the gentlewoman for just that line in that scene.
Yeah, perfect. Or a tree or anything. I begged. I'm like, oh, please, could I be seen from Macbeth as well? But they were like, just come yourself.
Happy Fleance. Happy Banquo's son.
Yeah, perfect. To the child. It was fine. But I don't know, it definitely worked out. The best way, I think, because to be in three is knackering. Some of the cast were in all three plays.
Oh, were they? Yeah.
It's a massive amount of work, especially when you're understudying as well. Mm. So people would be three plays, and across the three plays have, like, a bunch. I think some people were, like, had a total of 40 characters.
Wow. That's insane.
By the end of the season, I mean, that's an absolute... massive amount of work. I mean, the challenge is incredible. And Merry Wives, because I had a sort of smaller part in that, and I'd not done much Shakespeare yet, I sort of asked, I was like, I would love to do some understudying, because I'd never really done that before as well. So I was going, please, can I understudy? Just a wee keen bean, really. Too embarrassing.
No, but it's true, though, because I imagine, did you have to live in Stratford-upon-Avon during the run?
Yeah, we were
there. I would imagine,
For 9 months, yeah.
And so when Juliet wasn't on, I guess it was nice to have to be part of the other production. Otherwise, you would have been a bit kind of like, what's the name of the pub? There's something duck. You'd be
sat in there. Straight to the dirty duck. Yeah. No, it's nice having a wee night off, though. Mm. Like, especially when it's so, you know, it's big and it's heavy, and you have to sort of just invest every fibre of your being into it. So when there's Macbeths on one night and you can go home and have a quiet time, that's really nice. And I'm also really glad that I had Merry Wives at Windsor, which was just this wacky comedy to contrast, and play my character. I was playing Anne Page in a sort of like Essex girl. The whole thing was
oh,
like,
nice.
Stuck around Cowie, so I got like, yeah, it was nice to be playing Juliet, the sort of
contrast,
pure young creature, and then Mary Wise to go in and pile the makeup on and all the extensions and the fake tan and painting your teeth white and everything.
Oh, wow. Was it done quite modern then, the Merry Wives?
Yeah, it was great. It was really, really fun. Yeah, it was bonkers, and a very strongly stylized piece as well. So it's one of those ones, maybe at the beginning, you're sort of going, oh, what is this? Is it going to work? And then the audience is really... really enjoyed it, and we had a good laugh doing it, and lots of good music and things like that in it as well. So yeah,
that's
great.
Oh, lovely. And so how did you prepare for a role like Juliet, other than obviously having your books in different places all the time to learn the lines?
Oh gosh, do you know, it was weird because I suppose at the very beginning I had the choice of, in my head anyway, I was thinking, I can go in totally sort of raw with this, or I can go and I can read every single book about the rules of how to play Shakespeare, which I decided I didn't want to overdo it, because maybe if it was a different character I would have approached it differently, but because Juliet is young and she's sort of, she's not, she's not been branded by the way of the world yet. I tried to do that, not to sort of over indulge in the rules, because she, I don't know, sort of just got sort of flying with your instinct a little bit. I decided to trust that a wee bit, whereas if I was maybe playing a more mature character, I mean, she is very mature, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you mean. If you're playing Lady Macbeth, for example.
Yes. Yeah. Or someone maybe more
or
calculating.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe it would have been good. But in rehearsals, I do remember Erica sort of advising John Barton's sort of, I can't remember, playing Shakespeare, is that what it's called now? I've forgotten.
Yeah.
It's got an amazing theme tune. But the whole YouTube series, it's on YouTube, the whole series is on YouTube, with all these actors like Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart when they're like in their 20s. And even though it's old and quite dated, they're all sitting there sort of smoking. That was so useful in just like sort of the how-to of how to play Shakespeare. That was amazing. I would advise that to anyone, actually, if you've got the time at the moment. John Barton's playing Shakespeare on YouTube is so good, and just gives, there's just so much to think about, really. You could get obviously easily overwhelmed with the amount of information there is to learn, and I mean, we rehearsed for 18 weeks, so there probably would be time to
get
all the bash. Yeah, because
is that for all three players? Three players? I was just going to say, that's a long time, you know, that's a luxury. Amazing.
But almost too long though, because you can go around trying to make decisions on moments and characters and ideas that you can just be going around, and then you've tried a few different things and then come back to the original idea.
Yeah, but that's good though. But sometimes, yeah, you can overthink it, and you just get to a point where you need that audience in and to get that response.
Absolutely.
It's like doing a painting and just like then you put that extra splodge on it, just ruins it because it's just too much.
No.
Less is more. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But what, while that was happening, I was also trying to think about teenagers in my life that I knew, because I wanted to make her like authentic, because it's set in modern day, and I was thinking, you know, teenagers now are very different from teenagers 400 years ago in so many different ways. But like, you know, 13-year-olds now, I swear they're more mature than I am. So I was trying to think, and I was living with them. My second cousin once removed at the time, and she was, what age was she, like 17, 18? So I was trying to think about how she would deal with things. and also just, yeah, looking up teenagers from around the world surviving in different places, like teenagers in war zones, because Verona, there's a lot of violence and conflict in our world of the play, and just looking at the resilience of teenagers in like places like Ukraine and even like Aleppo and things like that, to just see how young people, how do they actually get on with their lives?
Yeah.
And it's so many challenges all around, and it was quite amazing because a lot of the time those teenagers are still living their lives the way that teenagers do, almost.
Mm.
And amazing resilience, and it's quite inspiring. So yeah, it's just drawing on lots of little bits like that, and trying to run around Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh in the snow. I got an email saying, make sure you turn up nice and fit. So I was like, oh, because we started at the beginning of January, and I was like, I need to go running. So running in the snow and trying not to fall over as well.
Oh. Yeah, I think you're right, because obviously as a teacher of teenagers, secondary school, I think you're right. They are a lot. They're mature in some ways, but not in other ways. I think they're socially more mature, like more savvy. They grow up a lot quicker, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a lot younger than me, but in my generation, I think we were a lot more protected. We didn't see so much. We didn't have social media at all. In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It was telephone and letters.
Yes.
But, you know, and I've been thinking about that quite a lot recently, about how the lockdown will affect our teenagers.
If it had
happened 20 years ago, the lockdown, it would be very, very different. I think it would be more damaging, maybe. I don't know. Social media has its ups and its downs, and I think in this time it has its ups and its downs in a different way, and I think in many ways it can, you know, like Juliet, sort of make them go against their pet, you know, like disappear into a room and in their own world and make their own decisions badly or not. But equally, depending on the family situation and the layout of your rooms and where their technology is and where their gaming is and where their head, you know, it can actually bring families closer at the moment, the lockdown, where they are having to engage in conversation and sit and have a longer dinner than normal because parents are trying to draw them back in. So it would be interesting to see. It would almost be interesting if you were looking at teenagers now and doing a rerun of Romeo and Juliet, how that might affect
that's
it.
So true.
It's interesting.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about it this morning, actually. I wonder how the Capulet family would get on in lockdown together.
That's funny. Did you when you were thinking about, you know, the role of Juliet? So you were talking about research and things like that. Did you look at how other people, because it's quite an iconic role? Did you look at how other people have played Juliet over time, like, I don't know, Claire Danes in the Baz Luhrmann film and things like that, or did you go, I don't want to be accused of copying or replicating, so I'm just going to...
I know, I mean, I tried not to, actually, and I didn't want to watch the film, but that's just how I always sort of... That's how I do auditions, and it's how I approach roles, usually. I love to just have a completely fresh slate and not be influenced just because I feel like it challenges me creatively and having to use my imagination and flying off instinct again. I really tried not to look at them until I think The Guardian put up some pictures of Romeo and Juliet through the years. That was quite cool.
Nice.
Having them looking at the pictures. But then Niamh Cusack, who was playing Lady M and Macbeth, has played Juliet at the RSC, I think, opposite Sean Bean. So she was, I mean, she is just the most lovely woman anyway, but she was always there and was very kind and sort of like, oh, if you want to come round and like chat about anything, about your thoughts on it or like challenges or anything like that, which is so lovely. But sometimes I've quite like sort of having to totally create it on my own. I don't know. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It was just with different challenges and different projects. Sometimes it feels totally right to go and find out every single thing I can about anything ever to do with a piece, and then other times I just think, no, if I really want to create this totally true to myself, especially something that's been done so much, I've got to create my own version. I've got to put the blinkers on, and
And it's got to match what you and your Romeo and your director and the whole concept, and that's always going to be different anyway.
Yeah,
and I guess at the end of the day you think, well, you know, they called me in for a reason. I am unique and I'm their version of Juliet, and I think with acting that's a great thing to have. I think sometimes with musical theatre, if it's not a new show, you know, particularly if it's a long run of a show, you're kind of brought in and have to kind of fit into the mould, which is the alphabet or the, you know, whatever character. But I think, you know, with Juliet, if you think about the fact that the first Juliet would have been played by a boy actor, a chorister from St Paul's or whatever, you know, it's definitely there for your own interpretation.
And it's cool because it will always go on like that, won't it? I mean, well, Jesse Buckley was due to play at the National. I actually don't know if that's, hopefully that'll be happening next year or some point, because I think she's wonderful. And then how exciting to then go and there will be a brand new interpretation of it. It's cool. It's just why theatre is great, isn't it? Because you can just carry on exploring, like, forever and ever. So it's,
And what advice would you give to Juliet?
Oh God! Don't go for the boy. Oh my gosh! It's a Juliet. Oh, that's so hard.
It is tough because hindsight's a great thing, isn't it?
I know, but I don't know if I have good advice, because I would probably want to say something like, you do you, you just do exactly what's right for you. But I think she did, and it didn't end well.
Have you seen the musical and Juliet? Because that's kind of that, isn't it?
I've not seen it. I've got friends who are involved in it, and
because that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the message, is like, you be you. Just scrap that.
It's that good message for a reason, isn't it? I wish I could remember every time I go for an audition. Like, I'm very good at saying to other people, like, you know, there's only one of you in the world, but listening to your own advice sometimes, it's so true though. You are the only person who's doing what you can do, so trust it and try and live within it. And I don't know, I'm trying to be a little bit better at that.
But I guess that's what made, you know, what you said, you didn't say easy, but that's what made that process of getting the part of Juliet, because you said that you were the only person in the room. That must be a wonderful feeling, because as an actor, the amount of times you've probably arrived at a casting and gone, oh my God, I thought I was unique, but there's like 9 people that look the same. She's a bit taller, her hair's a little bit less, you know, she's got straighter hair, her eyes are green, you know, and you kind of look around the room and think, oh, I thought I was me. So I guess, you know, when you rock up, it's like a job interview, when you go and there's only a few candidates, it makes a massive difference to seeing sort of 6 or 7, because it puts you in a kind of tense.
You can feel confident until you see all the other people that are going for it, but that's just totally in your head as well, isn't it? It's a difficult mind game to sort of balance out,
So what was your favourite moment? I know it's a long time ago now, because this was it 2018, the production?
18,
So what was your favourite moment in the play, if you can remember? Like, what was your favourite line to deliver, or particular?
Oh my God. There was loads of bits I loved. I really loved the whole soliloquy of her about to take the poison just because I feel like it had all been like so mad up to that point on her journey, and then it just felt like a very still moment on the stage, even though it was sort of based around this torturous decision that she has to make. But it was always quite exciting when, I don't know, it was just like everyone else had left the stage, and it was just getting to speak to the audience. Mm. I felt like, even though the words would be the exact same every night, I don't know, it just felt like a very personal moment between me and them, which I loved, because I don't know, it was a challenge, sort of like, I don't know, drawing them in, talking them through this whole moment. I did enjoy that. I kind of liked some of the lines that you could spin a bit of humour on sometimes as well. Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you just connect to things when they're a bit funny as well, don't you?
Like, definitely.
I love comedy so much. So when you can find moments of humour and things that are probably not meant to be that funny,
yeah,
I quite enjoy that. I don't know. There's so many good bits that happened. / I can't remember lots of it.
I know, it's a long time. It's a long time ago. And why do you think, you know, because obviously, you know, my podcast goes out to everyone, but a lot of the people that listen are drama teachers and students who are hoping to tread the boards one day. Why would you say that Shakespeare is still relevant today or important?
Yeah, I'm thinking. Sometimes I think I answer things too quickly without actually thinking.
Usually the gut is the thing.
Yeah. I suppose the ideas and the themes that he deals with are so massive and just human. Love, jealousy, you know, hate. They're just fascinating to explore, aren't they?
Mm.
With all the different characters that he's written so well. I guess there's so much to delve into and sort of work out human beings that he's written and these characters who are just so easy to engage with.
Mm.
And his writing's beautiful as well, and a challenging thing to sort of get into. I don't know, you sort of have to... it's like a locked room, isn't it? Sort of... with the language that can seem like a massive barrier, but once you sort of learn to understand it, there's just this whole sort of world to access, which seems like a different place, but is still with us today. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
No, it does. At all.
But I guess it's the ideas and the themes that are so old and they still like live with us today, and we explore it in the same way. You see the same characters out in the world that he's written. I don't know, maybe it binds us together a little bit.
Nice. Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, something good. Like that. And what was your sort of, to wrap up, what was your sort of training journey into theatre, and what advice would you give to young people? I mean, obviously, currently we're in this just unprecedented situation, and there's a lot of students I know who are, they didn't really get to do their showcase, or they didn't really quite get to finish their A-level, or you know, whatever, they're off to drama school and it's going to start on Zoom and you know, all of this. But what, in a normal situation, you know, training wise and going out into the world, what would you give them as advice? What have you learned?
Yeah, I mean, I really, really feel for everyone who's lost their showcases or are about to head off to drama school or A-levels or anything like that. Like, keep going, because that's a very difficult time. I left high school and I went and did an HND at college in musical theatre. And then when that had finished, after 2 years, college had just announced a BA honours in acting. So I stayed for one more year to get my degree. And after that, I mean, I did have Showcase, but I'd managed to get an agent just before that, which took the pressure off in many ways. I just got out and just worked as hard as I possibly could. I mean, I really didn't have a life all the way through college. It's just head down. So I think my advice would be to just work as hard as you possibly can. Well, that passion and that fire is so alive in you. Go for absolutely every opportunity. I always think of it as knocking on every single door. something will open to you, and when you keep working, it's almost like another key for another door.
Nice.
So if you, yeah, like just keeping all your skills up, because the stronger they are, the more doors you'll sort of get through, and just, yeah, work hard and go for every opportunity. You'll learn something from everything.
Mm.
I'm about to go start working a farm, and I'm very much hoping I'm going to learn something that I will bring back into the industry.
Yes. You'll be like, any farm roles.
I'm here for it. I know how to pick broccoli now. Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so, so much for chatting to me today. I'm looking forward to watching the production on Sunday. I've been watching a lot of online theatre. It's quite a different discipline. It really is. But yeah.
Yeah.
So looking forward to seeing that. And good luck with everything, and enjoy the fresh air and the countryside.
Thank you. Well, you too.
While you can.
You too.
Take care. Thank you. Bye. So a big thank you to Karen Fishwick for our interview today, and thanks to the Royal Shakespeare Company for organising this with me. I'm looking forward to seeing the production on Sunday the 7th of June at 9 p.m. as part of the BBC's Theatre in Quarantine series. Here's a bit of the trailer and some of the audience responses in 2018.
I really enjoyed it. It was really good.
Really powerful. I think I was almost in tears by the end. It was really fantastic.
I'd say it's a modern twist on a real classic.
I love the fact there are so many young people in it, and it's such a modern interpretation.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's really easy to understand.
It was the fact they made it fresh, though. Like, it still felt like a new story. Like, it was still enjoyable, like it was for the first time.
And I really enjoyed the way they had to go with changing up some of the gender roles as well. I thought that made it even more modern.
Yeah, the female Mercutio we really liked as well.
Oh, yeah, she's boss.
She was really good.
I love the set, I love the way the cube worked. Couldn't praise it enough. Fabulous.
Yeah, I'm falling in love at 14. I mean, who doesn't fall in love at 14?
Now for my finale and curtain call. In the last episode, I chatted to Mark Goldthorpe, who was recently in Mary Poppins, and he's created onstagevoice.com and masterclasses with Jenna Russell and Di Pilkington. We're all missing theatre, and if you want to reminisce some previous productions that you might have seen, or find out more about productions that you may not have got the chance to see, then why not listen to episodes 1 to 20 of Theatre Audience Podcast. In these, you can find discussions on West End musicals such as Hamilton and Juliet, Mamma Mia, Come From Away, Les Misérables, Pretty Woman and Dear Evan Hansen. And plays such as Fleabag, Coming Clean, The Sun, Henry VI, Death of a Salesman, I Think We Are Alone, Endgame, Cyrano and Uncle Vanya. On most of these eclectic productions, I go backstage and interview actors and actresses, including Alice Fern, Gareth Snook, Patterson Joseph, Jonathan Broadbent, Mark Holden, Kirsty Hoyles, Mark Goldthorpe, Nari and Aaron Blair Mangat, Rachel Tucker and Olivier Award nominee Lauren Ward. There's even a Broadway episode where I visit Chicago, Moulin Rouge, Lin-Manuel Miranda's Freestyle Love Supreme, and I go backstage at Beetlejuice and stand on the Winter Garden stage and chat to head of props, Austin Rodriguez. so there's plenty to keep you entertained over the coming weeks. In my educational episodes 23 and 24, Trapped Teaching The Tempest, I'm joined by several actors from the West End, the RSC and the National Theatre who recorded monologues and duologues from Shakespeare's play The Tempest and then provide me with commentaries on how an actor prepares. I've linked this to the GCSE and A-level specifications, and this is supplementing my online drama teaching. In the next episode, I'll be chatting to Gareth Snook, who I interviewed backstage at the Bristol Old Vic in episode 17 on Romantics Anonymous. We chatted about life under lockdown, the live streaming of Phantom of the Opera, Cats and Les Miserables, and the numerous productions that he's appeared in, and about his involvement with Wise Children. Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Spotify, Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. And do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, then please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.